Hi, this is Arnold calling from Cowes.
Hello there.
I suppose I should moo, maybe. That would. It's great to speak to you again.
Yes, it is. We're still here.
Yeah, I was just looking back, and it's almost a year. It was like 10 months ago when we spoke, and a lot has happened since.
Certainly has. Yeah.
You've been quite busy.
We have, haven't we, really?
I would say so, a very productive time.
A busy-ish. I suppose we could be busier, but we don't want to be. That'll suit us, really.
Well, that's it, isn't it? You've got to pace yourself. I know that feeling.
Because we're shivering here. I mean, it's dreadful.
That's what I heard. I interviewed George Galloway last week, the MP, and he was complaining.
He'd complain about anything. But it's getting us down here a bit bad. It's a bit sun out today, but we're looking forward to a bit of a summer.
Yeah, well,
we've got a heavy May, and the month of May is quite a few gigs for us there.
Oh, good.
And we've got a holiday camp in North Norfolk.
Something
like that, which is going to be a new experience for us.
Oh, that sounds interesting. Are you going to wear the striped suits, shirts, jackets?
Oh, I think so.
and the straw hat, you know.
The red coat stuff.
Exactly.
Well, we wear a few of those anyway. we'll wear the rubbish. But I don't know really. I wonder how a sort of seaside family audience are going to. Well, it's sort of end of the pier rubbish anyway, isn't it? So should be okay.
Oh, I think so. Yeah,
that's going to be a new experience for us. I don't know when that's going to be. Actually, it'll be in the summer. I mean, we've got that to look forward to. We're doing the Daphne du Maurier Festival down in Cornwall, which will be a highly intellectual crowd there. So quite a range of gigs.
Well, that's right. How do you adjust your act?
You don't really. Just do the same old thing. Just blunder away with the same old rubbish. And they seem to... seem to enjoy it. We've played quite a variety of places, from schools to the festival. Festival, the Chichester Festival Theatre.
Oh yeah,
which was very good. That was a good one, nice one, and a very nice small one out in Suffolk, a little theatre there, which was very nice. And of course, we did our Bloomsbury.
Oh, yes.
The other day. That was very good fun. Nice big crowd.
Oh, I definitely want to talk some more about that.
Oh, right. So that was fun. But I think... So the next interesting thing coming up is we're going to do a support slot for Ian Hunter.
Oh.
From Mott the Hoople.
Yeah.
All the young dudes. He's doing... He's doing a lot over your way. He does a lot sort of all over. He travels around now with his band called the Scratch Band or something. No, what am I talking about? The Rant Band. That's not the Scratch Band. The Rant Band. Ian Hunter. And he's playing the Barbican in London. And he wants us to go on before him.
Oh, beautiful. What a nice thing.
That'll be fun. Yeah, it'll be interesting because... normally, up until now, we do our own show, you know, and so people come along specifically to see, tuned in Bonzo people come along. So they're all tuned into what they should be doing, whereas this will be untuned Bonzo people who not necessarily know quite what the Bonzo rubbish is all about. So it'll be interesting to see how they take to it. Really, so that'll be one to look forward to once again in May at the Barbican. But not the Hoople, they used to do quite a few tours of the States, I remember, back in the 70s, I think. But back in 70s, it's sort of my son had to remind me, really. I couldn't remember. I made them some robots. It must have been Motley Hoople, boy, it was. Because I think they'd seen... I think they formed in... looking at his website, they formed in 1969. So it couldn't have been really much while the Bonzos were in operation. I think because in the early 70s, of course, I used to do a lot of support spots with my solo show for all the groups. You know, I mean, Deep Purple, Fairports, The Who, and King Crimson. My act fitted very well as a sort of support act, you know. It wasn't threatening at all. And I could get on and off fairly quick, and I was pretty cheap. So used to do a lot of spots, and I think Ian and Motley Hoople sort of quite like the robots, really. I assume that's why he wants us on to support him in his... Because, I mean, he's doing... We're all old, aren't we? We're doing sort of, you know, these sort of dreadful things these old people, rockers do, really. So we're all doing it. So he's still doing it. And... I built them, yes, because I knew, I thought, that, I think that was it. They were going to America, they were going to do a tour of America. I mean, it must have been early 70s. And when they sort of really just formed, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And they really, so I built them a bubble blown robot and a robot that blew feathers out of its head. And I thought, well, you know, since this is these guys taking this on the States, you know, I better make it out of sort of good stuff, really. So it doesn't break down. So I bought all this, you know, approved sort of commercial, not that you can buy approved feather brain blowing robot, but the sort of internal workings just for the bubble blower to turn the thing and flash the eyes on and off and all that. I bought sort of proprietary commercially available flashers and things like that. And thinking, but of course, they just broke down just as quickly as my old rubbish did. You know? So they were just, you know, I was a bit disappointed in that, really. I thought I spent all this money buying this stuff. In theory, it shouldn't break down. It broke down. I might as well have put my old rubbish in there. And, at least it would have broken down with, you know, this sort of aplomb.
Army surplus stuff. You did.
Oh, yeah. Any old thing I can find, you know, bits out of old things. No wonder they break down. But even this commercial stuff didn't last long. But I remember them coming back and saying that... so they sort of eventually got things going. And I said, well, how do you get on? You know, they said, oh, great. We used to go around all the hotels nicking feather pillows to get the feathers out for the feather brain exploding robots. So I used to nick all these... travel in pillows, apparently.
Oh, no.
I think they probably stayed at some pretty high class hotels to actually have feather pillows in the first place. But, do you know that ever since, I suppose, the late 70s, I've managed to do my entire act, which I did my act through the 70s and the 80s. And I think I stopped using the robots in about the early 90s.
The robots are retired.
Sorry?
Those robots that you had back then that are retired, have they been enshrined in a rock and roll museum over there in the UK?
No, they fell apart in my shed, basically. they died a death. In fact, I tell you what happened to most of them, because I did some teaching over here at Chelsea College of Art, and I think I took all the stuff in for the students to take apart and do things. When it came to the reunion shows that we did a couple of years ago, I had to rebuild them. So I've rebuilt them fairly faithfully. So they are new ones, and they are they're more lightweight, really. They've got a few modern components. I can't think of anything else for them to do. They still do the same old rubbish that they used to do. Head exploding and bubble
blowing.
They're
just easier on your back now.
And stripper, yeah, because and a stripper because.
Oh, yeah.
This, you can, in the old days, I think I built the feather brain robot out of a vacuum cleaner turned upside down in reverse, so it certainly blew instead of sucked. And that was quite a heavy old 1950s vacuum cleaner that plugged into the mains. But now, and I actually used one of those again. No, in fact, that one remained. I still, that's the original. Except I think about 6 months ago, it just completely blew up. I think at the 100 Club, that was at the 100 Club we were doing down here, last May, I think, wasn't it? It blew up, so I had to rebuild it. And of course now you've got computer fans, you know, that cool down computers. They're very lightweight and they run off batteries, and the batteries are better these days. So I am battery operated now, which is good, lighter, and also it means I don't have trouble with all these sort of Jobsworth sort of dudes in looking after the health and safety.
Right.
And you know, they don't like you plugging weird things into the mains. They get a bit sort of freaked out by it. So I'm all battery operated now and completely safe.
I just want to introduce Jeffrey Wiseman, who's joined us on the interview. He is a great fan of Bonzo's and you. So you heard another voice there. That is he.
And also DJ out here out west.
Hi, Jeffrey. You live in Jollity Farm.
Yes, I do.
Yeah. I don't know what to be more over here, really. I don't know if anyone's actually talked. I'm sure there must be some people somewhere. I saw a weird band in Wales, a family band once. We're talking, there was a program about family music, and there was this family on all playing instruments, and they said, right, we'll do a number now, and it was Jollity Farm. I think that's the only thing I've really sort of introduced into folklore, and it must be international folklore. I'm sure it's not just British. Is that in Jollity Farm, the line is "Stuff it up your jumper, vote ODL."
Yes,
that is my line, and I've noticed that everyone when they play Jollity Farm does actually use that line. I introduced that line in about 1967 in a pub called the Dragon Arms in North London. We were having a particularly bad time, and I was interjecting derogatory phrases wherever I can. I'm not sure what the line was before then. You'd have to go back to the music, the original sheet music, which I'm sure someone's got. I think Dave, our pianist, has got it. The original line, but it's so ingrained now that everyone who does Jollity Farm goes, "Stuff it up the jumper, vote ODO."
Did you ever have any fans who actually were familiar with Misery Farm, the original?
That's a pretty depressing number, isn't it, really? I mean, we really didn't pay much attention to Misery Farm in the early days, because really you can't play that on a Saturday night in a pub. You know, people, you know, the public are going to come up and say to you, "What are you doing?" But there's a CD out. I don't know whether you get it over there or whether it's called "The Songs of Bonzo's Tortoise," which is a sort of CD that's issued over here. It's original, not, you know, all the Bonzo rubbish. It's the original versions.
Yes.
Oh.
Did the same for the Grateful Dead and others, yeah.
It's the original versions by the original artists, you know, things like Leslie Cerrone and Jollity Farm and all those original numbers, and Hunting Tigers and Alibaba. And they do include Misery Farm on that, actually, on that CD. That's really the first time I've heard it. You know, I never really wanted to hear it, you know. For some reason, it didn't capture our imagination at the time.
Is there any chance of Bonzo's coming and doing an American tour?
That's what we want.
It's probably unlikely. I don't know. I think we're getting old now. I mean, didn't like to travel in the best of times when we were fit. We've got a possibility of going over to Holland. So let's see what happens. We'll go to Holland, and we'll do a couple of gigs there, and we'll see how we feel. We might then sort of think about hopping over the big pond. I'm sure, yes, once again, I'm sure there would be some people there. Whether it be enough, really, to make it, I don't know. You see, Neil's coming over, and you've got Neil over there soon, I think.
Right, he'll be over. Yes.
You know, right on his tails over here, yeah.
Yeah, he'll be over. No, I mean, well, so you'll have to make do with him for a bit, but I don't know. We'll see. It would be nice. I'm sure there's lots of people who'd like it. You'll have to see. This is a bit of a shock for us, really. I thought I would be retiring and just sort of, you know, growing a few vegetables in a garden in Somerset, but suddenly now we're back on the road with Mott the Hoople. It's all getting a bit confusing, really. So that'll be good fun, but we'll see. Also, Australia, people, you know, I'm sure we go down well in Australia, actually. But
oh, yeah.
Thing. So you were talking about shirt. We just did another shirt, actually, for the new CD.
That's right.
Called Shirts 2010. And it's extraordinary what people just say the same things as they did 50 years ago. I suppose that's not too extraordinary, really, but they're wonderful, British public, and I'm sure the American public. I mean, it would be very interesting, actually, to go. I don't know if any of you guys have tried that over there. Just go out on the street with a microphone and ask people to talk about shirts. It's amazing what they come up with.
I think Jeffrey's volunteering to do that, I believe.
Yeah, well, I actually have a little project in the works with a gentleman named Trent, where we're going to go interview, do man on the street type interviews, and we'll work shirts in.
Work shirts in, and just talk about them. And people, I did mine just down the supermarket down the road, and of course I had a tiny little, because all the tape recorders these days are tiny little things, aren't they? Sort of little tiny, which didn't look impressive at all. So I had to put it in a huge bag and put a pair of earphones on. You know, people then think they're actually saying something important. So don't go along with a little, tiny little one of these little plastic things with a knob on it, and you know, and just shove it under their noses. You want a good big old microphone, or at least hide it in a big microphone. But I hid it in a big bag with a proper studio recording mic and a pair of earphones on, you know. This chap started talking about his shoes, you know, sort of brown shoes and black shoes. Wonderful, wonderful stuff.
Oh, that's incredible. Now, talking about American influences, you know, we got Jollity Farm, the book and DVD. And within that, I noticed that there's Joel Druckman plays a big part in your band.
Yeah, do you know him over there then?
No, I just read that. I want to get in contact with him. I think he lives down in Santa Monica, but
the only word I heard from about him was that we did a three bonzos and a piano gig last May. We're doing another one actually for the Brighton Fringe Festival. We did it down there, and Keith Emerson, from, you know, the keyboard player from Nice, was there apparently, and someone said he was in, so I said hello to him from the stage, and he came up afterwards, and he said that I'm afraid I don't know where this is. I don't know what university or anything, but his daughter's university professor was Joel Van Druckman. He's now lecturing on music history, I think, in a university somewhere. So where that is, I've no idea. But if you get hold of Keith Emerson, and you'll get hold of Joel Van Druckman through Keith Emerson's daughter.
Okay.
So, but Joel Van Druckman, he came over draft dodging. He was, I think, in the '60s. And the bass playing, a bass player position in the bonzos in those days was always a bit of a fluid post, really, because originally it started off, Viv used to play the tuba, and the bass part on the tuba, and then he gave up and got his mate Legs Larry Smith to play the tuba. So he played the tuba. Then Sam left the band, and Larry took over on drums, and we were always looking for a bass player, and Joel van Druckmann turned up as one of the bass players. He sort of, I think he got in touch with us. I think we had a little ad or a little mention in the column in the Melody Maker. He was over here draft dodging, and he just phoned up and said, "Hey, you guys, I've played with the Mothers." And of course, Larry, being an American maniac, wow, yeah, anyone who played with them, wow, let's have you along. So he came along and played a bit of bass with us for about a year.
There never seemed to be any female band members. Was that by design?
I think so. It never really came up. You've got the Jonathan Farm book over there.
Oh yes.
Yeah, the pages haven't fallen out, have they?
They've not even yellowed yet. No.
No, because the pages will fall out of some of them. I'm warning you.
Oh no.
A lot of my one I got. Yeah, it's in a plastic bag at the moment. All the pages are dropped out on the floor.
Oh no.
You'll notice that's why the pages are numbered with great big numbers. You see. So you can see, spot them easily on the floor.
I read in the book that Chuck McCann tried to help you out on your last tour, getting you bookings after one of the band members had to go back and help his wife give birth, and all the second tour that fell apart. The actor Chuck McCann is still around, who tried to get you guys some more bookings, tried to hold that tour together, and I wrote him recently.
That all sort of passed me by a bit. It was me who went home, because my wife had a miscarriage, yeah.
Oh, sorry.
I shoved off back home, and the tour was going so sort of badly that the rest of the band said, "Yeah, all right, we'll come back with you." And we just sort of left Viv there to sort of mop it up a bit, really. And he walked into the office and said, "Oh, the guys are gone home." And they went, "What do you mean they're gone home?" The guys are gone home. You know, sick of appearing in Detroit, and the record would be out in Boston or something. You know, I mean, it's just ridiculous. They couldn't get it together at all. And every town we went to, the record company representative would turn up and virtually interview us. You know, we'd have to, you know, sort of to find out who we were and who he was representing. You know, so we got sick of, after giving our resume about the 10th time, we thought this is enough, really.
Yeah, after you've been established with a ridiculous.
Well, there's a few tribute bands over here that have sort of turned up recently. And sort of met us. There's one up north somewhere in Stockton, a sort of a tribute band, and they came to see us. We did a show up there, a Three Bonzo show at the Gateshead Sage, nice big theatre. They turned up with that. So there's one or two, but I didn't realise there were some people like that. And also, of course, it came a bit of a surprise to us that people like Ade Edmondson and the Young Ones and Stephen Fry and all that were heavily influenced by Gorilla, you know, and our sort of stuff.
You scarred a whole generation, you know.
Yeah, of sort of closet people. But back in the old days with the sort of Eric Clapton and those sort of people, you know, there were a lot of bands that were saying, "We wish we could be like you, but we can't, you know, we can't go on stage and blow hell out of the trombone or anything because our fans just won't like us doing it, but we'd love to." So they did envy us the fact that we could do anything. And even Ade Edmondson over here, where he came on tour with us about 3 years ago, 2 years ago, and he was a bit, he was quite surprised that actually what you could get away with on stage And so we introduced him to the idea of being able to, you know, play an instrument. It doesn't matter if you can play it or not. If you can just get it to your lips and blow hard enough, the audience will love it. So he took up the trumpet while he was with us. And he had a great time playing Jazz Delicious Hot, Disgusting Cold.
In your early days, when it was mostly acoustic, and you had a bit of a following, did you have fans protesting when you guys plugged in?
I'm not sure. I think
you're too
everyone
loud,
went.
You couldn't hear them.
Sorry?
You were too loud. You couldn't hear them.
They may have protested while we were playing. Yes, we probably thought that was all part of the show. I don't think so. No, I think they came with us. They came with us, really. But of course, now we, with our latest three bonzos and the piano, we sort of go back to the acoustic roots. Although we obviously use sort of electrified things, it's really a lot of saxophones and wind instruments. More, you know, because when sort of Neil took over with guitar and stood up, and Larry got on the drums, and we had a bass player, you know, we'd entered that field. But we decided at this reunion a couple of years ago that really we ought to do a tribute to the earlier days, really. And Neil didn't want to do that; he wanted to carry on. So he sort of went off on his own, really. And of course, he seems to be over with you lot fairly soon, and he's doing quite a few tours. So he didn't want to go along with that. So we were left, really. So, and we don't have many. We don't have a guitar. We've just got piano, saxophones, and drums. And we've got Andy Roberts now on guitar, who comes along. So that's good. And occasionally we have Legs, Larry Smith, and Vernon with us. So it's nearly the Bonzos again. And that was the show we did at the Bloomsbury. And we've got a couple more in the summer like that, which would be five of the Bonzos, or six really, so pretty much a full Bonzo show.
Yeah, maybe let's talk about the CD. I mean, you know, it's always difficult doing a CD after a while. Everyone expects, you know, a certain thing, a quality, you know, of what they remember. And I must admit, I was trepidatious, but I tell you, you guys knocked it out of the park. I love
it. We're very pleased with how it went. It was made very modestly, because we're really doing this. We're back to the old garage band sort of thing of people, you know, what were they called? I used to use them on my old albums. The Flaming Groovers.
Oh, yeah.
That's it. We're almost back to like doing it ourselves. The reunion tour was financed heavily by the chap who wrote the book that you've got there. And he financed the CD, Paul Amour de Chien, which was his idea to do. And I wasn't sure. So we did that, but that was heavily influenced and mixed by Neil and things like that. So it was heavily orientated that way. As I say, we stopped doing the bigger tours, and Rod and myself, Rod Slater and Sam Spoons, thought, let's continue and let's do a show that is reminiscent of the old days, really. You know, so this is more like the early 60s, the pre-guerrilla sort of era. So we did that, and then, of course, inevitably, the talk goes to, well, we should do a CD, you know, but we ought to make a CD, because people at concerts like buying them. So, but you know, we are living sort of separate lives all over parts of the country, which in your terms over there, of course, is silly distances, but you know, 200 miles is nothing to you guys, I should think. But over here, it's the other side of the country. So getting four family men together with commitments and things like that, was a bit tricky, but we managed it. So it's a fairly modest attempt at the sort of rubbish ideas, you know, that we could put on a CD. So we're pleased with the way it's gone, but we're quite conscious that it's a fairly modest affair, you know. And it certainly was only financed sort of by us out of money we could scrape from the gigs that we do. So We're pleased the way it's gone, so I'm glad you like it.
Oh, yeah, I mean, well, creativity has no cost, you know, whether you spend $1 million or $100, if the goods are there, that will come through.
Yeah, I think it's, I mean, one always says this, I know that artists always say this, you know, that really give us another month at it and we'll get it really good. it was a bit like that. A lot of the stuff is, some of my playing is pretty bad, because it was really, like, literally... it's almost like demos, you know. We didn't have time to redo things, purely because we decided to launch it at the Bloomsbury. You know, we thought it would be good to get it done by then, which was our sort of biggest show. And so there was really literally no time to do it, because these things take a few, you know, a certain time to press and all that, you know. Well, you don't press CDs, do you? I'm thinking of the old vinyl, you see, to burn, whatever they do these days. So it was literally, you know, click, let's whack that down, you know. I'd like to redo that. No, I haven't. And literally, the street interviews for Shirt, I recorded the night before on a shopping trip to a supermarket. And I took them down to Brighton to mix them, and I didn't have time, so I just left them with Dave. And I said, well, there they are. Splice them up, you know. And luckily, I'd got just enough to provide a sort of a cross-section, and it works very well. But it was more by sort of pure luck than design, you know, but it seemed to work, and I think that's gone through the whole a CD, you know, is that it's fairly simple, but it just seems to work. We haven't cluttered it. It's not overproduced. I think that's probably a good thing, that it was whipped away from us before we could muck about with it.
Now, can you tell us, I want to hear about the Bloomsbury gig for your launch of the CD. It sounds like it was a pretty good bash.
Yeah, I was going to say it was a risk, but I don't know, really. We thought we'd done quite a lot of very nice successful gigs up and down the country in the provinces, you know, and we did a little one last year in a place called the 100 Club, which is quite a legendary place, in Oxford Street, and we did it really, but just purely for nostalgia reasons. But it was, it's not an easy venue to do, because there's huge cons. So we thought that we'd done these gigs in some nice places up in Newcastle, north of England, in the Sage and Gateshead, and as I say, the Festival Theatre down in Chichester. We thought, well, let's try an in town one. Let's do a London gig, you know. And of course, the Bloomsbury has connections. With Viv. Viv Stanchell did his Rawlins and End shows at the Bloomsbury. Both Rodl and I, we played in his band, so we played there as well back in the 80s sometime, I think. He did his shows there at the Bloomsbury. So it had sort of connections, and we thought, well, we'll try. It's a modest venue, it's not one of the big ones. As I say, we're doing the big one up at the Barbican with Ian Hunter. But the Bloomsbury, a modest one, but at least it's comfortable. And of course, our audience, being the age they are, like the artists, like a bit of comfort. So it seemed to be a good one. So the management there... seemed quite responsive, actually, so we just went for it. We said, hey, we want to do a London show, we've chosen you, what do you think? And they took us on, really. I mean, you know, they took a risk, because we did it for a fee. We always work for a fee, against a percentage. And so we thought, well, we'll try it, you know. And a lot of the feedback we were getting from the gigs around the country, people would write in and say, yeah, you know, good, love the show, can't wait to get to London to see it, you know. So we thought, oh, well, we'd better give them the work. So we asked Larry Smith and Vernon to come along and make it really as much as the Bonzos as we could. to make it a special show. And it worked very well. It was good.
Yeah, you know, Vernon Dudley, Bo Hey Noel, at last in Jollity Farm, we got to the depth of his involvement in the Bonzos. He was always a mysterious character.
Yeah. Oh, yes, Vernon, very popular chap over here. He plays in a couple of bands. He works also with Bob Kerr's Whoopee Band. But Vernon's enjoying coming back with us and doing some of his stuff. And we're going to do two more shows like that in England, as I say, down in Brighton and over in Oxford in the summer. So we'll do a couple more with Vernon. And as I say, we can sort of put on pretty much what the Bonzos used to be like back in the 60s in the Tiger's Head Catford, you know, the sort of original shows. And Vernon's an interesting chap. He's older than we are.
Yeah, he was like a teacher when you guys were the students or something, wasn't he?
Yep, basically, yes. He was teaching at, I think, he just passed out of Goldsmiths College, I think, and was taking up work as a teacher. And just entering Goldsmiths was, of course, Neil Innes, who used to lodge with Vernon. And that's how they... Vernon met up with the origins of the Bonzos at the Royal College of Art. And Neil Innes came along with Vernon. So that's how we got together with Neil.
Oh, OK. But then it appears there was friction between Viv and Dudley. That seems there was...
I think it's overstated in the book. If you're reading it from the book, you must remember that book is written by Bob Carruthers, who really gleaned most of his information from a few interviews he did with us and Wikipedia and all the sources where you can get and gossip and tittle tattle. So if you look at my, there is a blog that I've done on the Three Bonzos and a Piano website. If you log into that, you'll find a blog I've done that makes a few corrections about the book, because there are a few inaccuracies in there. For instance, the comma van, it's Vernon's old Daimler ambulance. There are no pictures of that in the book, but there's a picture of our old comma van, and the author says this is the Daimler ambulance. It wasn't. It's a comma van. So if you look at my blog, I've made a few corrections. So one of the corrections might be about sort of Viv falling out with various people. I think basically, certainly Viv did, there was a feeling abroad in the band, I suppose it did sort of emanate from Viv, and his sort of really his professional showbiz aspirations. That there were various people, Big Sid Nichols, who we met the other day in Wales, of all places. We actually met up with Big Sid Nichols. Haven't seen him for 60 years or something. But Big Sid was it, faces in the original photographs. And Vernon and Sam felt, and Lenny Williams on trumpet, felt that they really couldn't go through this cut and thrust of the pop thing, whereby Larry and Neil certainly had their sights firmly on the pop market. And Viv was up for anything, really. I mean, if he'd have joined a circus, you know, if he'd have done it, you know. So Viv was up that. But I don't think Viv actually ever fell out with Vernon, or he always did love Vernon, you know, unusual Vernon Dudley, Bo Hey Noel. But it just became obvious that they couldn't keep up with this sort of, you know, our sights were at the top of the charts, and we had to be a leaner band. So really, Vernon fell foul of that sort of shift within the band, really.
Yeah. Now, on your new CD, you've got obviously a tribute to Viv with Ginger Geezer.
Yeah. Well, that was Rodney's idea. He put that in the live act. And we've that's one number which we have done a lot of. You know, we've played it a lot. and Rodney wanted to do that as a live number, so it seemed appropriate to put it on the CD, really.
Nice.
So that was the reason for doing that. It's really Rodney's sort of personal tribute to Viv. And it's a number sort of Rod likes, you know, all the old Cockney rhyming slang and all that.
You obviously have one interloper into the band, David Glasson, who wasn't in the original. So how did that all meld together?
That came about the whole scene. The story is that, well, really, back in your childhood, in the 60s, and the Bonzos knocked it on the head in 1970 and said, right, enough is enough. So we all went our separate ways, really. I went on the road in the solo act with the Robots, or just the giant kinetic wardrobe. And as I say, I toured around England with supporting all these rock bands. So I did that for a bit. And but I, about the 70s, and late 70s, the 80s, I began to sort of think, well, I don't know, I can't do this forever. And I'd always sort of kept in touch with Sam Spoons, and he was playing in a band called Bob Kerr's Whoopie Band. And they had a pianist called Dave Glasson, who was playing in the Bob Kerr's Whoopie Band. And then all of a sudden, the entire Bob Kerr's Whoopie Band upped and sacked Bob Kerr. So they left him, because I won't go into reasons for why. So they were left as a band without a sort of leader. So they formed another band called Bill Poster's Ruby Band. And Sam at that time had other little bands going. And we formed a trio called Tatty Ollity. Which is Tatty and Jollity, with a bit missing, so you cut the J out. So Tatty Ollity, that was called. That was myself, Sam, Dave Glasson, and a singer called Dave Knight. And we used to do gigs in pubs. And then Dave Glasson and myself went off and did another act called the Slightly Dangerous Brothers, which is a sort of double act, which we used to do on Brighton Seafront. And that was it, really. And then those sort of stopped. And we stopped doing it. And I, about the 90s, stopped doing everything. You know, I thought, well, I'm not going to perform again. And then, of course, the reunion for the Bonzo Dog Doodah Band happened, to everyone's surprise. And that happened for a couple of years. And then, as I say, we reached a sort of disagreement with Neil Innes about how it should go on. So at that point, it stopped again, a full stop. And then out of the blue... well, Dave Glasson also had stopped performing in public. I was looking forward to a concert. But out of the blue, Sam rang him up from the Bill Posters band and said, our pianist is ill. Can you sit in on piano deck for us for a gig? So Dave Glasson went and did that, and it proved to be such an inspiration for him that he wanted to reform Tatty Ollity. And rang me up, and Sam Spoons, and said, well, let's reform Tatty Ollity. But our singer, late Dave Knight, had since died, so we said, well, we need a fourth person. I wonder if Rod is doing anything. So suddenly looking at it, with Rodney Slater in the band, myself, Sam Spoons, we had three Bonzos there. We thought, well, we can't add any more in because we just can't afford to run a big band like you know, 7-8-piece band on the road. It's just too expensive. We said, well, let's form a band. Because the reunion Bonzo tours have now stopped, but there's an audience there of people who love the old rubbish. Let's form a band that performs Bonzo stuff by the original people. Dave can perform, add in the piano bits. And so we got a couple of gigs down in Brighton, and what could we be called? Well, I don't know, really. We certainly can't be called the Bonzo Dog Doodah Band, because there's only three of us. So there's a show over here called a chap called Jonathan Ross, who does a show, and he's got a house band of four gay guys, and it's Barbershop Harmony with a pianist. Okay. And they are called Four Puffs and a Piano. And they're on Saturday nights with Jonathan Ross. They're quite popular. And Sam came up, and we said, well, what are we going to call ourselves? And Sam said, no, you know, you're four Bunzos. I said, well, we're not four, there's only three of us. And then it's Dave who plays the piano. So it's sort of, aha, well, of course, three Bonzos and a piano. We've got to call ourselves that. So that's how that came about, really. And to say, Dave, it was a converted idea of Dave Blassie wanting to reform our old Slightly Dangerous Brothers band, but and myself and Rodney wanting to continue with the Bonzos. So we reached a sort of compromise in the middle, and we are essentially a quartet of Rodney Slater, Sam Spoons, and myself, with Dave Glasson on the piano. But we've also with us quite permanently now is Andy Roberts, but who did quite a lot of playing with the Bonzos for the album Let's Make Up and Be Friendly, and also performed with Neil a lot in The Scaffold and Grimms and various from the Liverpool comedy scene. So Andy Roberts is from that end, and he lives in Brighton, and so he came down and saw us in Brighton and said, I'd love to sort of, deck with you guys sometime. We said, well, it would be good to try it. And so we had him as a guest on several gigs, and he's pretty much a permanent guest now when he can make it, you know. So it's a very nice five-piece band. And then occasionally, of course, with Larry added in there and Vernon, it becomes practically a Bonzo dog band again.
Yeah,
so
six
we're working our way up slowly.
Could you do maybe a robot of Viv? You know, put him on.
I'm not sure whether that would be a good idea or not. Really. I don't know. I think it's one thing I would need to think about. I think we do our own tribute to Viv. You know, because we have to do the numbers. We have to do Big Shot. We have to do I'm Bored. Numbers off Gorilla. We've recently added Canyons of Your Mind, which are like. And all those. And Shirt, of course. But that's okay because that's my number anyway. And Trouser Press and Monster Mash. And we do all the Hunting Tigers in India and Jollity Farm. We do all that stuff.
Do you get to add any of your solo? Do you do anything off Electric Shocks?
Haven't got round to it. Because we've now launched ourselves into the public eye and doing Bonzo stuff, there are so many numbers that it's very difficult to... There's so many ones that people want to hear that the set is... even so, we do 2 one-hour shows in a night. Each half is an hour long, and it's just packed with numbers. We really haven't got round to sort of including any of those. Maybe one of these days, but at the moment we're perfecting the ones we've got, and there are so many favourites that we have to do that. But of course, the thing is, with the reunion shows. We did three a couple of years ago. The big question was, well, who's going to do Viv? Because Viv is the vocalist on a lot of these. And the answer was, in those days, in the days of 2005, 2006, we'll get some famous people who are actually fans, and Stephen Fry, Phil Jupiter, some various people over here, leapt at the chance. But of course, that couldn't go on forever. They're very busy guys, they're all doing their own scene. And there was also a genuine feeling amongst the audience. It was a sort of groundswell of opinion that, hey, look, these guys are taking over. They're making it their show. This is their show, using Bonzo material. We want the original Bonzos. Neil didn't want to do any of it. So I made a suggestion at one of our meetings. Is, well, look, who needs them? Let's do it ourselves. We don't need session men. Let's just do it and see what happens. And Neil was very sceptical and said, oh, I don't know. About, basically saying, I don't think you guys are good enough. So, of course, that's a red rag to a bull, really. So with the help of Dave Glasson on the piano, and this idea of the quartet, we did it. And I said, well, I'll do it. I can't sing to save my life, but I'll do it. Why not? Let's give it a go. We can only fail, and we can only fail once. So let's do it down in Brighton, in a small club, and see what happens. And we did it, and no one threw bananas at us, or you know, no one booed. And so for my sins, Rodney and I have been sort of sharing the vocals, really. I've been doing all Viv's numbers. I do Big Shot. It's quite amazing how you can actually remember the words. I had to memorize the words. And if you think of Big Shot, I mean, it's quite a story that Viv does there. Of course, with Big Shot, now, if you're familiar with that or have another listen to it, the end of it, of course, is this dreadful joke about dark brown overcoats. And it's an old English musical joke, you know, which we used to pinch. And we do that now almost as a tribute. You know, we can do these things. Like Shirt, we take Shirt apart, you know. And you talk about the intro to Shirt with these guys talking about shirts in the high street. We now do that as a quiz, of course, is that I go around the audience and I give them the question, and if they come up with the right answer, such as, you know, I've got plenty at home, or I prefer the short shirt, or something like that, if they get us the right answer, they get a certificate. So we turn it into a quiz, and it works. There's enough idiots in the audience who, instead of doing their PhD, have, you know, studied tadpoles. And this is their time of life, because their 30 years of study have suddenly paid dividends, and they can stand up in the middle of 500 people in an audience and shout, "I've got plenty at home," and receive a round of applause and a certificate, which is what I mean. That was the good thing about Bloomsbury, is that it was, because round the country, of course, we do shows, and maybe half are bonzo addicts and the other half have just come along to see. That's why we're interested to see how we do our thing with Ian Hunter, because, you know, it'll all be to see Ian Hunter, and we'll see how we do. But anyway, the Bloomsbury, it was all dedicated fans. So we had 500 people answering the questions to Shirt. We had 500 people, incidentally, doing the head ballet. That may be a bit of a problem for you guys who've just heard the records and have not seen the show. The head ballet is in fact a ballet of heads, and we do all movements and things on stage. And we got the entire audience of 500 people at the Bloomsbury doing the head ballet, which is good. And also getting back to Big Shot, we had 500 people shouting the punchline, "No, but I've got a dark brown overcoat." And I did say, if we do it loud enough, Viv may hear us. And they really did. And it was quite an impressive sound.
That's 500 people. Certificates you had to hand out.
And no, because I told them the answer, you see. It's only for Shirt. Well, they have to guess it. The 500 people, they knew what they, you know. That wasn't a quiz. That was, well, in fact, it was, because I didn't tell them the punchline. I mean, just 500 people knew the punchline. But as I say, we have to do Viv's part now. So I do Viv's part for my sins on I'm Bored and things like that. But Sam does a couple of vocals on Jollity Farm. And, of course, Rodney does his Ginger Geezer. But of course, Rodney now is writing his own material, which is on the CD, Senior Moments and White Van Man. But he's writing material like that, which is very good, and of course, which he sings on stage. So and Dave does his own stuff as well, you know. So we get around it. We wonder whether it works, and it does. People accept it, you know, that we feel we can do this as a tribute to Viv. You know, we're not imitating him, but we're just doing it as his nearest mates who were actually with him while he was doing that stuff, you know. I mean, we flirt dangerously with being a tribute band, but, you know, it's the only tribute band that uses the original members.
Now, the gift certificates you were giving out, are they for shirts or socks or...
They are certificates,
but they are signed by us, and they are for outstanding knowledge of the... So if anyone wants to hunt around in the website, you find all the rubbish on there. It's three bonzos and a piano.co.uk, I think.
I do have one little trivia question, wondering who did the sniffing of Pluto on Mickey's son and daughter? Do you recollect?
Now, that's a good one, isn't it? I know Neil went, "Hey, Pluto!" It may have been me. I don't know. Someone went like that.
I thought it might be your sniffing.
It could have been anyone. It could have been anyone.
Who knows? Dog sniffing.
That's a good question. Yeah. My wife was very flattered the other day when someone wrote in a letter. It's on the website actually. That he's fallen in love with Satnav Sally from our CD. Especially, you know, not the song. He said, "I'm not falling in love with the song. It's just the young lady."
And,
my wife is flattered at being called a young lady. So that's my wife. Here's one for you. I don't know if it's credited actually. I think it's Rodney's first wife, Mrs. Slater, who is laughing on, it may be Slush, or maybe one before then. Anyway, there's a lot of laughter going on. That's Rodney's first wife. I know that. Pauline.
Just want to say thanks to you know, your great fans over there, Louise Longdon and David Christie, for helping me.
They're marvellous, aren't they? Yeah. Well, we couldn't do without them. They're wonderful, devoted, loyal fans. This whole setup really is a goodwill basis. You know, we're doing gigs for not much money, just because we like doing it, really. And they're just doing it for the love of Bonzo, which is an extraordinary thing, really.
Beautiful.
Yes, it is. Well, we feel it over here, believe me. Well, thank you so much, Roger. Really appreciate the time you've given us again. And just we wish you all the best, and just keep doing it. Don't ever stop. Please.
Please don't stop.
No, we won't, and we'll try and get over there sometime. But we're doing it here at the moment.
Okay.
I'm going to say goodbye to you, Arnold,
and
guys over there, and have a good time. And thanks so much for the interest, by the way.